6-2-2-3-7.
Repeal Dodd-Frank. Repeal Obamacare. It really isn't that tough if you try. It's easy to turn around this economy. Just have the backbone to do it.
That's the voice of Michelle Bachman. Bachman was joined by the rest of the boys who want to be president on the Republican side of things for yet another debate, a Tea Party debate. It was on CNN earlier in the evening, and a lot of things got tossed around. It's the same stuff, jobs, Social Security, what would you do if you occupied the White House, that kind of thing. And this time, everybody really dug their claws in on the governor of Texas, Rick Perry. Hey, everybody, Kate Delaney, America Tonight. Coming up in this show, we're going to take a look at the debate. In fact, we're going to take you to Tampa. Jeff Holtzman was there covering the whole thing. He was in the spin room afterwards, and he has some thoughts on what he heard, what he saw, all that kind of good stuff. Plus, also, we're going to talk about crazy things that are happening when it comes to Facebook and you, meaning if you're doing some nasty stuff on the weekend and you post it all over Facebook. I don't care if you're in your late 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, dare I say 60s and 70s. The older folks know how to use Facebook, right? It's true. And somebody puts a picture up of you and somebody that shouldn't see it sees it. What happens? Well, it's like a domino effect. Paul Bazell, HR expert, joins us to flush that out for us. And a couple of other surprises along the way. But let's go to Tampa, Florida first. You heard Michelle Bachman there. As I said, the governor of Texas really was the guy who had to play deflector. And he softened some tones on a couple of things. One of the things that he kind of took a step back on when he was, I think, being assaulted was his jobs record and creating jobs, and also the vaccination of the schoolgirls against a cancer-causing sexually transmitted virus. He answered that question and was asked in a couple of different forms the same thing over and over again. In fact, Michelle Bachman, who you just heard, and former Senator Rick Santorum, really, really tried to nail him on his executive order to require those young girls, they had to get an STD vaccine. So it was the first time in all of these debates that some of the differences seemed to take over. In other words, permeate the theme of the evening rather than the politeness and the common goal to get rid of President Barack Obama. If you go back to June and the debate in New Hampshire, which was more like a town hall, if anything, there was no attacking of anyone, really. It has certainly changed since then. And remember, this was sponsored by the Tea Party. So who comes out as the winner here? 8 on the stage, debating for a second time in less than a week, which is a pretty fast pace, sponsored by Tea Party groups. And, of course, these are the people who pushed the Republicans to the wins in November in those midterm elections in 2010. And the Republican Party has shifted, has changed. How much power does the so-called Tea Party have? And judging by this debate and some of the things that we've seen, I'd say they have a lot on the line here, and I'd say they have a lot of influence. And it was kind of a not raucous, but kind of a, let's say, excited, electric crowd, if that. So Bachman seemed to do pretty, I think she seemed to do pretty well. She's playing to the people who really like her. Rick Perry was also perceived and received very well. So probably the three, and it's no surprise, who have gotten the most support so far, Rick Perry, Mitt Romney, and Michelle Bachman, I think walked away the best in this particular circumstance. Does anybody end up leaving? You've got 8. You've got 14 months. before the jig is up, and ultimately who's going to occupy the White House, what's going to happen there. So now it's going to start to get tighter, especially as we swing into these fall months and then jump into the next year. I think one or two people probably go, why Newt Gingrich hangs on, I don't know. Because I think he's somebody who's wanted to be president for a long time, and he does lay out some pretty meaty things when he speaks, but the problem is whenever there's a poll, he's too far down on the polls, and I just don't see how this guy pulls it out. How does he pull a rabbit out of his hat, to win this? I don't think he has the horses. You might agree, you might disagree. Send me those thoughts. You know how to do it. You can reach me through the website, of course, americatonight.net. Click on the email and bada bing, you are in. But in a nutshell, that's what we got from the debate. A lot of attacks on Perry, on some of the things he did as governor of Texas, jobs, and that vaccine for the young girls, the teenage girls. And he deflected that and defended that conversation about jobs and getting people back to work. And speaking of jobs, we have to lay this out here because it was a big day for the president. He started off the morning talking about jobs and his jobs plan, which smacks squarely up against the Republicans when they say they don't want to raise taxes. Already Eric Cantor has his back against the wall saying, no way are we going to, pass more taxes. And looking at Obama's jobs package, his plan, that's exactly, it's no surprise, but that's exactly what will happen. It will happen to people who make a certain amount of income, and that's why Obama says, listen, this will be paid for. This will be paid for if the Republicans will just stop hemming and hawing. So now it'll be tough because he's specifically laid out in this proposal that he set out, 150-plus pages, not broad strokes, but really drilled it down. Here's how it went, and I also threw this on the website. So if you're listening to this and you're saying, what else did she say? I didn't catch that. He talked about a couple of things. One, a limit on itemized deductions and exemptions on people who earn over 200,000, families over 250. He says in his plan that would raise roughly $400 billion over 10 years. Here we go with the 10-year thing again. We need the money today, yesterday, or in the next 2 years. But anyway, it's a $447 billion jobs plan. Also, it would treat carried interest earned by investment fund managers as just regular income rather than taxing it at a capital gains rate. That would bring in, he says, another $18 billion. They would eliminate oil and gas industry tax breaks. That would raise another $40 billion. Are the numbers just floating in your head? And then finally, a change in corporate jet depreciation rules. That would raise another $3 billion. So there it is in a nutshell, down and dirty. That's the rub for anyone who falls into any of those categories. Clearly, does this create jobs or does this squeeze companies who will be less inclined to hire more people and will keep those jobs somewhere else? We're heading to Florida next to chat with Jeff Holtzman from Talk Radio News. Have you ever heard of a pharmacist who discourages the use of most prescription drugs? Well, pharmacist Ben Fuchs is that person, and boy, is he fascinating. He's a nutritional pharmacist and skincare specialist who operates out of Boulder, Colorado. And to hear this man speak is nothing less than inspiring because he's charismatic and makes a lot of sense. He asks, why take dangerous drugs when all your body needs to stay healthy is all natural with no side effects? Pharmacist Ben sees the human body as a healing and regenerating system, divinely designed to heal and renew itself on a moment-to-moment basis. But it needs nutrition and nutritional supplementation. Ben says you've got to be on a nutritional supplement program if you want to be healthy in 21st century America. And he wants to help people get off the toxic drug treadmill and get on a good nutritional supplement program. I support what pharmacist Ben is saying and doing to help America get healthier. And I urge you to watch and listen to Ben deliver his powerful message at your convenience. Just go to AmericaTonightTeam.com. That's AmericaTonightTeam.com.
As many people know, ever since President Nixon took us off the gold standard, the U.S. dollar has been devaluing. What people don't know, however, is how this directly affects your personal finances. Is there a way to protect your portfolios from losing value? The answer to all of this is gold and silver. They both have maintained their purchasing power for 6,000 years. If you had $100,000 in cash and $100,000 in gold and silver back in 1913 and kept them until now, your cash would have the buying power of only $4,800. But your gold and silver would have the buying power of $3 million. The answer to protecting your assets is simple. Call John Ballman today at 1-800-686-2237, extension 169. Get all your questions answered before your money is worth zero. Call 1-800-686-2237, extension 169. Take action today while we still accept paper dollars for gold. That's 1-800-686-2237, extension 169.
Big Berkey water filters are in high demand. Storable foods are also in high demand. BigBerkeyWaterFilters.com has always kept our focus on the Berkey water filter products, but increasingly, our customers have been asking for storable foods. After months of research, BigBerkeyWaterFilters.com now offers great-tasting, long-lasting, storable foods. These ready-to-eat meals are packed in airtight nitrogen pouches. All you do is just add water, and because they're sealed so well, they come with a 25-year shelf life. Combine our Berkey water filters, which are powerful enough to purify treated, untreated, or even stagnant pond water with our storable foods, and you have a winning combination. Remember, we offer free shipping on every order over $50, and GCN listeners receive 5% off all ceramic filter systems. Visit BigBerkeyWaterFilters.com or call 877-99-BERKEY. That's BigBerkeyWaterFilters.com or call 877-99-BERKEY today.
Yes, indeed. Tampa was the site for the Tea Party debate. It's the usual suspects on the stage. You know who I'm talking about. From John Huntsman and Michelle Bachmann and Rick Santorum and Newt Gingrich. And the two heavy hitters, of course, Rick Perry and also Mitt Romney. And throw in a big full house. And yes, in fact, you have a debate. But I guess as you go through this, and now we've seen a couple of these, you ask yourself, I always say, what's the scorecard? Who won? Who seemed to slide a little bit? And who got a few zingers in? Jeff Holtzman from Talk Radio News had the pleasure of covering this debate. He's in Florida. Hey, Jeff, how you doing, buddy?
Hey, I'm great. It's good to be with you.
You know, so overall, what was the? It seemed like there was lots of applause. It was a pretty. It seemed pretty emotional to me. It had a different flavor, I guess. I'm thinking from afar, watching this and rewatching it twice. Did it seem like that to you? It was a little bit different than the mood when we started out in New Hampshire?
Well, yeah, I think it was a little different. And really, the landscape of the GOP field has changed since New Hampshire. You know, in the last 2 months, you've seen the addition of Rick Perry, the Texas governor, the subtraction of Tim Pawlenty, who was, you know, when this whole thing started, one of the front runners, and he's gone. So now really what you have at this point is sort of a two-man race, I would say, between Rick Perry, the Texas governor, and Mitt Romney, the former Massachusetts governor who ran in 2008. And I think right now Rick Perry has the edge, not only according to most of the national polling that's going on, and in fact, the most recent poll that I read, a CNN poll conducted yesterday, put Perry over Romney by a dozen points. So Perry is leading the field by an astronomical count in the polls. But I thought he did a good job tonight in the debate. And I think that you can tell that he's the front runner when you go back and you watch the debate and you realize that everybody is trying to gang up on him and bring him down a peg. And I thought tonight it worked on some cases. It didn't really work on other cases. I thought, you know, Michelle Bachmann went really hard after Rick Perry on the law that he signed via executive order in 2007 in Texas requiring young girls to get the HPV vaccine. Of course, you know, for most conservatives, it's, government has to be hands-off. The government cannot, meddle in the affairs of ordinary citizens, especially when it comes to health care. And so, you know, for conservative candidates, that's something they really want to hit Perry over. But I also thought that Mitt Romney went after Perry on jobs. Mitt Romney obviously has his 60-point plan to create jobs, and Rick Perry hasn't really, you know, Perry's talked a lot about his efforts as governor in Texas to create jobs and grow that economy. But Romney said today that basically it wasn't because of anything Perry did. It was the fact that Texas is just well-suited as a state to growing jobs. And Romney had a great line. He said, you know, when you're given four aces, that doesn't make you a good poker player. And Perry shot back, you know what, I think you should stop talking about poker. So they had a little back and forth. But in the end, I think the debate was really showcasing Rick Perry. And I thought that he came through it pretty well. I think he's still the front runner.
All right, so you think he won, you think he's the front runner. The Tea Party obviously likes him. You talked about this. He answered, watching that, the HP vaccination question pretty well, because Michelle Bachmann, you're right, did go after him on that. And he admitted, he just said, yeah, it was a mistake. Did you think that was pretty clever of him to just do that and not try to sidestep it?
Well, I actually think what Perry did was he said, you know what, I wouldn't have, if I could do it over, I wouldn't have done it the way I did it, meaning he wouldn't have done it. He wouldn't have issued it through executive order. He would have done it through the legislative process. He would have, gone to the Texas legislature and said, hey, guys, this is what I want to do. That's what Rick Perry is saying. So he's not flatly rejecting what he did. And, in fact, he was asked about it multiple times, and he said, you know, for him, it's a matter of life. The HPV disease is known to cause cervical cancer. It was something for him that he said he wanted to help girls preserve their lives. Afterwards, after the debate, I went into the spin room and talked to Rick Santorum, who's one of the candidates, and Santorum is absolutely livid at Rick Perry over this. Santorum, you know, his objection is that he thinks it encourages young girls to start being sexually active, and of course that's something that the Perry campaign denies as being a reason why he signed that into law. That's going to be something that the candidates are going to go after. But at the end of the day, Kate, I think this thing is all going to be about the economy and jobs. And I think that HPV issue is really going to fly under the radar as we move on. We're 14 months out, and as we get closer to things and as the, you know, primary season starts, I think that's going to disappear in terms of an issue that can bring Perry down.
Yeah. Ron Paul, he was also on the stage. How do you think Paul did?
Well, it was funny because I was texting a buddy of mine who he's a political consultant himself. And at the beginning of the debate, it seemed like Ron Paul was just out of gas. And I was actually watching this debate thinking to myself, is this the last of Ron Paul? But I thought that Paul came back in the second half of the debate with some good responses, particularly, you know, Paul. He's got a lot of supporters, and they travel well. And, in fact, I ran into a couple of them here on the fairgrounds in Tampa. And Paul is on his game when he's being provocative. And foreign policy is really an opportunity for Ron Paul to showcase what he's all about. He was asked about Afghanistan, and he said, you know, the bottom line is we have to pull our troops out of Iraq and Afghanistan, bring them home. That got a lot of applause from his supporters. He was also asked about the budget. How do you balance the budget? And he said, you know, first and foremost, you take all the troops out of, foreign nations like Iraq and Afghanistan, and now, of course, we have four troops in Libya. Who knows where that's going to go?
Right.
And that scored him a lot of points, too. But I think that Ron Paul at this point is no better than number three, and I just don't see him pulling off, an upset.
Okay, you like Perry in this. You talked about how Perry defended himself and, you know, that a lot of the other candidates tried to take him down. And one of the things that Mitt Romney goes after him about constantly is his whole take on Social Security and the Ponzi scheme comment he made before. Do you think he deflected that pretty well?
Yeah, excuse me, Kate. Yeah, I think he did a decent job. I think, obviously that was something 5 days ago in California that Mitt Romney was really able to capitalize on, going after Rick Perry for those comments. Since then, Perry and his campaign have had time to sort of spin that and smooth it over. And what Rick Perry's been able to do is say, listen, I don't want to demolish Social Security or end it. I want to preserve it for future generations. That's an argument that he needs to keep on making over and over and over again, especially here in Florida, where you have almost 20% of the population in the state 65 years or over. In fact, I was visiting with my aunt the other day, who I love and adore, and I was talking to her about the candidates, and she said, you know what, I like this Rick Perry guy, but he wants to end Social Security. So I think the Perry campaign really has to get that message out that they don't want to abolish Social Security. They want to reform it. Meanwhile, Mitt Romney is going to keep attacking him on that issue. You know, I think in terms of the Ponzi scheme thing, it's interesting. I've gone back and done some research. A lot of folks have called Social Security a Ponzi scheme, Milton Friedman being one of them, Paul Krugman, who's a liberal op-ed writer for the New York Times. It's just the fact that Perry's running for president. You know, it's something that the candidates can use against him. Again, it's an example of how I think that he has to be considered the frontrunner because everybody's trying to gang up on him. That makes him look like the frontrunner. It almost makes him look presidential. I think the fact that he's not, you know, the sharpest or the most polished debater is sort of overlooked in these situations because he's just, you know, he's got such a good record on the economy.
Yeah. I said the usual suspects, and I wonder if anyone will fall out from this. You mentioned Rick Santorum. How long does he hang around? What about Herman Cain? One of the things that they were asked, sort of on the lighter side, is what would you bring to the White House? And I guess it could be lighter or more serious. But Herman Cain said, I would bring a sense of humor to the White House because America's too uptight, which actually was kind of a funny moment. Do you think Herman Cain or Newt Gingrich or Rick Santorum or any of these guys start to fall by the wayside?
Well, first of all, I love Herman Cain. I'm going to take my reporter cap off here for a second and just level with you. I mean, I think the guy, I just think he brings a lot to the table. And he's a really interesting guy. I mean, he's pretty much the only guy that isn't, a career politician. He has a business background. He did serve a stint as the Federal Reserve Bank chairman in Kansas City. But I think that Herman Cain has a lot of ideas. You have to listen to Herman Cain because he's one of the only candidates, when he gets on the stage, he actually puts forth specific solutions, specific plans. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's something to be commended because a lot of these folks, you know, they talk in generalities, they speak very vaguely, and they try to go high on the rhetoric. But at the end of the day, I think we're at a point, at least most of the voters I've talked to in Florida and Iowa and New Hampshire, they want specific solutions. They want to know exactly how we're going to get unemployment down. They want to know exactly how we're going to restore GDP growth and pay down the debt. So Herman Cain, you know, love him or hate him, and, you know, again, he could be out of the race, in a couple months or so. But he's at least, you got to give him props for being high on specifics. I think, obviously Rick Santorum, he's done a lot of campaigning. He's put a lot of time and energy into this race. So it would be a shame for his campaign for him to drop out. But he's not getting a lot of time in these debates. And he's just not being looked at as a viable candidate. And really, I think outside of, you know, being a strong social conservative, I don't know that Rick Santorum has much to offer, to put himself ahead of, say, a Perry or a Romney. I think John Huntsman's another guy who came into this race with a lot of fanfare because he was looked at as sort of being the moderate centrist alternative, but he hasn't really been able to gain a lot of traction, and he wasn't able to do much tonight either. I don't know. I think Huntsman's sort of going off the rails on message. So, yeah, I mean, those are a couple guys who I think could drop out. And then, like I said earlier, Ron Paul, I don't know how much he has left. He's got this groundswell of support, but, you know, it's you saw what happened to him last time around, and the same thing could happen to him in this cycle.
Yeah, I agree. We don't know what's going to happen with Ron Paul. A lot of people listening to America Tonight actually really like what Ron Paul has had to say. Jeff Holtzman, Talk Radio News, thanks so much. Good stuff from you, buddy. Thanks.
I appreciate it, Kate. Take care.
For centuries, silver has been used as a powerful natural antibiotic, and as a listener to this station, you probably already know the benefits of using colloidal silver. With so many websites to choose from, finding a reputable, patriotic company with great products at affordable prices can be a difficult task. Introducing UtopiaSilver.com. UtopiaSilver.com carries the best, most effective, and most affordable colloidal silver and colloidal gold products in the industry. UtopiaSilver.com also carries products to fit your lifestyle, including weight loss, immune system defense, cleanses, herbs, joint and bone care, and much more. First-time customers using promo code GCN50 will receive 50% off all colloidal products. Visit us today at Utopia Silver, that's UTOPIA Silver, utopiasilver.com, or call 888-213-4338. That's 888-213-4338. UtopiaSilver.com, taking back America's healthcare one American at a time.
The GCN Radio Network, providing the world with hard-hitting talk radio. GCN. Great talk radio starts here.
If you owe the IRS money you can't pay, then listen carefully, because you already know that the problem won't go away by itself. You can get help today from the leading tax expert in the country, Dan Pilla.
Hi, I'm Dan Pilla. The IRS isn't going to just forget about you. Right now, the IRS is hiring thousands of tax collectors to go after delinquent accounts just like yours. That's why you need to take action today, and I can help. I take a simple but proven approach to solving your tax debt problem. First, I stabilize collections so you don't have to worry about wage and bank levies. Next, I build a detailed plan to get your debt reduced to the fullest extent possible, sometimes even eliminated. Finally, I work with you every step of the way to get your problem solved once and for all. So call now for a free consultation. Call 1-800-346-6829.
Dan Pilla will solve your tax problem, guaranteed. He's helped thousands of people, and he can help you, too. Call us today at 800-346-6829. That's 800-34-NO-TAX.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
You can't argue with success. And many people have found great success in fighting back colds and flu viruses with Ali-C, the world's best garlic extract. So now, it's time to get even more success with the other great quality natural products from Affinity Health Products. Like C-Energy Liquid Vitamins, Lose and Snooze, and the One Day Diet. Or Human Growth Hormone Support, Menopause Specialist for Women, and Joint Specialist. See these and many other quality Affinity Health products for men and women online at AffinityHealthProducts.com. That's A-F-F-I-N-I-T-Y HealthProducts.com. Or call in your orders at 877-888-7126. That's 1-877-888-7126. Trust your health to the makers of Ali-C, the world's best garlic extract. Affinity Health Products, the finest and most innovative natural health products available.
Welcome back to America Tonight. How often do I say on this show, follow the money, follow the money? And we've proven the point of where the money goes so often it leads us to the bad guy. Whoever it is we're looking for, whatever the circumstances, I think all of you know by now what I'm talking about. And, of course, throughout this hour we'll talk about some of those examples, as we always do. Jonathan Schanzer joins us now. He is the Vice President for Research at the Foundation for Defense of Democracies. And also, this is so interesting, he's a former terrorism finance analyst. Can you imagine that gig at the United States Department of Treasury? Jonathan, thanks so much for hopping on ATN.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
So let's talk about this. If we, you know, we just went through the 10-year anniversary, and I was thinking about this. I was in New York at the time. I worked all sports radio station, WFAN, in New York, but we just did away with sports for a while and talked about all aspects of what was unfolding before us. And that was one of the things that was one of the first things I did, is I started to ask about the money. And then there was lots of reports on that. There was some good reporting actually being done talking about assets and freezing assets. So take us back for a second. It was just a couple weeks after 9/11 that the president had an executive order, am I right, that had, of course, the list of terrorist entities, basically, that were on the hit list, and that's when we started to target the money, correct?
That's correct. I mean, actually, to be more precise, there was already a small organization within the Treasury Department, within the Office of Foreign Assets Control, that had already started tracking terrorist funds beginning in the late 1990s, but After the attacks of 2001, the president issued Executive Order 13224, and it listed, I think, 23 different terrorist organizations that we had already had our eyes on. And what it did is it immediately made it illegal to have any financial transactions with them, and that their assets were to be frozen here in the United States. And we continue to add to that annex, as we called it, that 13224 executive order, with additional terrorist organizations as well as individuals, and then later on charities and companies and other fronts that were involved in the financing of terror. And quite frankly, it was one of the more successful operations of the U.S. government in the immediate aftermath of 9/11. When you look back at the 9/11 report, those activities were one of the few things that the U.S. government did that earned high marks from that commission.
Yeah, absolutely. And you weren't surprised by the results that you found, right? Because it was like breadcrumbs to grandmother's house or right to the hornet's nest.
Well, that's right. And unfortunately for us, the terrorists that were operating here in the United States did so with the knowledge that we just weren't doing anything about it, and they operated really in the light of day. And so in the early goings, we were able to shut down a number of charities and a number of high-profile cases where we were able to capture a good deal of money. And also, I mean, the upshot of terror finance activities is it also helps you draw a map. So if you can see where the finances are going, where the money is being siphoned off, you can identify new nodes, and you can begin to focus in on those as well. And so we charted it out, and we were able to really crack down on a number of terrorist networks, from Al-Qaeda to Hamas to other organizations as well. And so for the first couple of years, it was a very successful endeavor, both in terms of identifying terrorists and capturing their cash.
Do you think, Chris, I remember this the story about Holy Land Foundation. Are you familiar with them?
Sure.
Out of Richardson, Texas. And an interesting twist on my own story is before I went to New York, I was doing a show in Dallas, Texas, and the Holy Land Foundation would hit us up because they would have this charity bowling tournament. And they, there was this ruse of what they were doing for people, and they tried to appear very mainstream, had sent out lots of press releases and that kind of stuff. You know, I never got involved with them, but I am certain that other of my colleagues probably went out and supported some things that they were doing to raise money occasionally because they would have athletes or someone else involved. Was this ruse? I mean, obviously it worked. Were you surprised when you were able to pull back the layers of that when all that fell apart? Well, you're not surprised, right? Because that was the way they realized that what we were doing in the United States philanthropically was so important that if you could just hook somebody in, there's your hook.
Yeah, absolutely. And all these organizations, you know, there was no charity that I ever saw while I worked at the Treasury Department that was 100% dedicated to the financing of terrorism. And so what you'd see is that these organizations would get involved in all sorts of philanthropic activities, and that they would be throwing off, you know, a percentage. Maybe it was 10%, maybe it was 20%, maybe it was 30%. But, you know, the money would be going to these terrorist charities. And this is what made our job that much harder, because at what point do you decide that a terrorist charity is rotten, or that a charity is a terrorist charity, for that matter? If 70% of what they do is good deeds and 30% is going off to terrorism, well, is that enough? And, you know, in the eyes of the U.S. Treasury, it absolutely is. But it made it that much harder because if you think about the optics, specifically among Muslims here in the United States or abroad, where giving charity, or zakat as it's called in Arabic, is one of the five pillars of Islam. And so for us to go around and shut down charities and to capture the funds of people who initially thought they were earmarking it for good deeds really was a black eye for the United States Treasury Department, and really made it look like we were very insensitive to Muslims. But the bottom line is that we realize that if you have a charity that brings in $30 million a year and they give off 30%, that's significant enough. In fact, it's probably too much. And so we had to move forward anyway. And the Holy Land Foundation, I think, fit that mold exactly.
Al-Qaeda now, don't they, isn't it pretty much it would have to be cash is king for them? They've got to be smuggling cash somehow, and they've got to have, I would assume, some kind of courier system, not being able to use the banking system any longer in the U.S. Am I right?
Absolutely. I mean, that's the one thing that we really began to realize by, I would say even as early as 2004, maybe 2005. But, you know, by then the terrorist organizations had realized, that, you know, we were able to capture them. We were able to find them. And so it drove them out of the formal banking sector entirely. So, you know, they couldn't open up accounts and they wouldn't wire funds. And there were all sorts of strictures that we put in place. There were suspicious, transactions that we would be following, you know, just large chunks of money. You know, there was at least a predicate within the intelligence community to take a look, at anything that was above a certain amount. So it became much, much harder for the terrorist organizations to work through the formal sector. And as a result, they now resort to what we call bulk cash smuggling. And, that is really the only way that Al-Qaeda operates today. And that's just basically putting wads of cash into a suitcase and having one guy, a courier, take it across a border or take it across town to get, to have cash moved from one place to another. And, you know, unfortunately, we've become victims of our own success here in the United States. Because we've been effectively able to push them out of the formal sector, it's now very, very hard to find that money because, you know, cash has no receipts. There's no money trail. So either you have intelligence, you've got a beat on one of these couriers, and you're able to capture them, or begin to follow them, which is exactly what we did with Osama bin Laden, by the way. It was a courier that led to that raid in Abbottabad, Pakistan. You know, you need to have good intelligence now, not just the ability to track the funds over the Internet.
Yeah, and do you think, because we talk about this, through my sources, and I think lots of people know this, it's been widely reported with sleeper cells and whatnot, it still has to be a little bit more difficult in the U.S., right? Wouldn't it be harder? Or is it still, hey, you can move cash in the U.S. too. If they're already here, there's ways to do that, like you said, through the bulk delivery, if you will, maybe by bus, maybe in different directions, not necessarily through the airport, because then with opening suitcases, even if you're just jumping from New York to L.A. or wherever, it might be more difficult. But do you think there's a lot of cash circulating in the U.S. that way?
I think so. I think it's very reasonable to believe that. You know, I've been out of Treasury for several years, so I couldn't speak to anything specifically. But, you know, let's just put it this way, that if you wanted to move cash from Detroit to Minneapolis, all you have to do is drive it. And no one's going to stop you. There's no way to, you know, that anybody would have any tip on that, you know, unless you are already on the radar of the intelligence community, of the FBI. And it would really have to be an FBI issue, not so much a CIA one, if it was a domestic, you know, a domestic, case here. So, it's very easy. And, you know, we know, by the way, that this is not just a terrorist issue, that organized crime engages in this, and gangs engage in this. That if they want to make sure that their transactions are off the record, cash is the way to do it.
Yeah. Jonathan, before we let you fly, tell us quickly about the Foundation for Defense of Democracies. If you and I were in an elevator and I said, hey, Jonathan, what do you do? What would you say?
It's a nonpartisan organization that was founded just after 9/11 to study and warn Americans about the threat of jihadism and terrorism. And so we've got a former advisor to Dick Cheney. We've got a former CIA operative. We've got PhDs. We've got Treasury analysts. And all of us work on different areas of the Middle East, looking at the threats that these areas pose to the United States.
Yeah, so you find those threats and you pass them on to all the obviously various organizations that your backgrounds are in, correct?
That's right. We'll work with, you know, government organizations. We work very closely with Congress. And, of course, we publish widely. We write books and we'll appear on television and on radio. But the idea is really we're an educational organization designed to just shed light on a problem that 10 years ago very few people knew about. But even 10 years after 9/11, you'd be amazed at what Americans don't know about the threats that are posed to us from the Middle East.
I believe you. Jonathan Shanzer, thanks so much. Will you come on again and enlighten us a little more?
Oh, anytime. Thanks for having me.
All right, thank you.
Heart and Body Extract continues to receive positive testimonials from people who have experienced amazing results, like Reed.
I just wanted to send you a quick but a very big thank you for Heart and Body Extract. I've been on the formula for nearly a month now, And the improvement in the circulation of my leg has been simply amazing.
Reed was facing a tough choice.
I was facing surgery due to the severity of 100% blocked arteries in both my legs. And my decision, waiting for surgery, to say no and try heart and body extract instead, has been thankfully the right decision.
And the result?
I can now walk up steps without noticeable pain.
Order Heart and Body Extract at 866-295-5305, 866-295-5305, or hbextract.com. Heart and Body Extract, for a long and healthy life.
The American people think they live in a constitutional republic, land of the free, home of the brave. Right.
Just try those lines on the judge when you get a ticket or have to deal with a big bad IRS.
Instead, use escapeharassment.com. Since 1972, our volunteer group of researchers and educators have successfully taught how to escape tickets by law, and it works. Escape Harassment has three different steps to follow, depending on where you are in the ticket process. Learn how to escape tickets, IRS, or court proceedings before you go to court. For free, three-minute pre-recorded information and FAQs, call this toll-free number, 1-877-457-9009. That's 877-457-9009. Or go to escapeharassment.com and see our money back guarantee. That's escapeharassment.com. Remember, escape harassment works.
Introducing a diabetes breakthrough, an easy, natural, organic way to bring relief to diabetics. Introducing MDS Forte, a concentrated super strength extract formulated for those who are looking for quick action. Listen to what the revolutionary MDS Forte can do for you. MDS Forte reduces glucose levels safely and effectively, reduces cholesterol and triglyceride levels, increases HDL or good cholesterol while reducing LDL or bad cholesterol. MDS Forte reduces A1C, improves eyesight and circulation to the limbs, and helps weight loss. Is non-toxic, caffeine-free, 100% natural, 100% organic, and comes with a 100% money-back guarantee. Waiting for the side effects disclaimers? With MDS Forte, there are none. Order a 25-day treatment of MDS Forte at BestBloodSupport.com or call 213-405-5355. Call 213-405-5355 or go to BestBloodSupport.com. That's BestBloodSupport.com for MDS Forte, a diabetes breakthrough.
Being careful on the job these days, you really want to make sure that you do just that. What can you do? What can't you do? You know, have you read the company manual? Do you know what the policies are? I hate to say this, but being a person who's in broadcasting, when I first started and I worked for a lot of television stations, you would get these thick manuals, and half the time, I didn't really, you knew the basics, how many days off you had, all that kind of stuff. But there was the fine print that you signed your name to that you didn't always read the entire book. You didn't read the whole thing. Now it's a little bit easier because I think most HR departments put out whatever the company policies are. Usually it's very succinct. Sometimes it's even on a CD or a PDF or what it might be. You still probably have to sign certain things. But it's not the way I think that it used to be. You know, War and Peace. No one was really reading that. And you gotta read. You gotta read the fine print. Facebook has thrown a new twist into our world, right? Because what are people putting on Facebook? What kind of pictures of themselves? We've talked about this before here on America Tonight. Where this has been used in a court of law in divorce cases where a spouse said they weren't cheating, weren't doing this, and then they were caught red-handed when they pulled up the Facebook of the person and saw them with these various pictures where they were out having drinks and dinner and whatever it might be. What about employees who are doing whatever they're doing on their off time and it shows on Facebook and they might even be trashing their job, for example? Can they be fired for that? Because remember, you've got the National Labor Relations Act, and it says that employees, and we're going to get somebody on here that's terrific to talk about this. It says that employees have the right to talk to each other about improving work conditions, because there was a case where someone thought they were going to get fired for what they said about their environment. It was some workers in Buffalo. And in fact, they ended up getting the boot, but then had to be rehired. So what is that all about? Joining us now, Paul Bazell. He's an HR expert. We love having him here on ATN to pick his brain about this kind of stuff. Paul, you know, that I just said that whole employee handbook thing. I mean, I hate to say it. In the past, I've been guilty of it because, you know, I just figured, well, I know the basics. I'm not doing anything that I shouldn't be doing. But I think you have to know now. I mean, you really need to arm yourself with the facts, don't you?
Well, yeah, you're right. But, you know, to your point, Kate, back in the old days, I'm just really glad they didn't give us a test, right?
Exactly.
But today they are the employee manuals that we help employers put together are, as you said, a lot more succinct, and they're word searchable, so employees are generally looking for certain things. They can get to them and find them relatively easily, so it's not like it used to be in any way, shape, or form. But you also pointed out very succinctly that Facebook is and all social media has thrown a whole new wrench into the works when it comes to employment policies.
And would you advise somebody, if you were doing HR for them, would you advise them to spell out that kind of stuff, what they're surfing on the Internet? Because, you know, everything's done by computer, almost all the jobs across the board. So would you specify that? Would you spell that out about sites?
Well, if an employer has certain expectations of what employees are supposed to be doing with their time and not supposed to be doing with their time, it's generally prudent to spell those things out in, as an employment policy. Having said that, I almost sound like I'm talking out of the other side of my mouth now.
Right.
The more forward-thinking employers that were concerned about what employees might be posting on their own social media pages were making a policy of saying you can't do those things. You can't badmouth the company. You can't say bad things about the company. You can't say bad things about management. Don't do that. You know, that is not permitted, and you'd be subject to disciplinary action or potentially losing your job over it. Well, the apparent new rule of the day is that, well, not so much.
Yeah, that you can do that. Because it's a different kind of conversation, yeah.
Absolutely. And this is all new turf. So there are a number of cases on the books where employers' policies have been upheld and employees did, in fact, lose their jobs. And that didn't hold water in the Buffalo case.
Yeah.
I don't know why, but there's a different person making the decisions, and they had a different take on it.
Yeah. We live in interesting times, there's no doubt about it. And then, of course, you have the other thing with Twitter. We're focusing on Facebook, but who knows what comes up with Twitter, because there have been people who have also lost jobs, mostly in the entertainment business. And so there's clauses in contracts and stuff, so I could see how they could get them on that. But the things that people tweet, and I guess, I don't know, Paul, maybe people think only a few people are really reading this, but how could they think that when they have so many people following them? I'm stunned by how many people get stung by Twitter as well. And I think it's just that while you say this is, you know, we're trying to grapple with all of this, I think people in general are trying to grapple with social media, and I think they think there's sort of an invisible wall. Do you think that's partially what it is?
Well, we're definitely going through a big change in that area. Just ask anybody that's gone through a divorce recently.
I know. Oh, yeah. That's what I was talking about, how a lot of them, because you can do that, you can pull that up in the courtroom, and then it becomes evidence crazy. Hey, I always wondered this. Is it good when you go to work for a company, should you, especially now because there's some downsizing or sometimes through even just attrition, people start to absorb other job duties. Is it good to always get a job description? Do you tell your clients, hey, you might want to also cover yourself and make sure your employees have a job description?
Absolutely. There's all kinds of reasons, all good reasons, for an employer to have a really accurate job description for each and every position they're hiring for. It starts with the qualify your candidates, but it has also to do with pay scale, performance reviews, and so forth. And it just sets a good foundation for the entire employee-employee relationship.
Yeah, I agree. What about, and it's funny you bring up reviews. How, I think there's plenty of companies, lots of companies that don't even do reviews. Do you advise that as well? Listen, do the reviews, because then if you don't give somebody a raise or there's reasons for this or you want to elevate them, you have a record. Is that, that's got to be important, right?
Agreed. And, I think that, not doing regular performance reviews is basically a setup for a wrongful termination suit down the road.
Yeah, I agree with you. I'm stunned at some of the things that I've seen. I worked at a place that I won't name, but it's pretty big in the industry, where I came in and I was in an on-air management role, and the people that worked with me hadn't had raises in like 4 years, but all the people around them had. And I said, "How come you haven't had a raise?" "Well, no one asked us." Oh. And then, of course, I'm like, are you kidding me? Nobody asked you. And these weren't shy women, which it's not a gender thing, but they were all guys. I was in sports, and I was like, wow. It just showed the power that they perceived the organization to have. And then when I went to the main boss, the general manager, he said, absolutely, sure, bring it on. Tell me why they should have a raise. It didn't even blink. Like, well, nobody ever asked. We're not just going to pan it out like lollipops.
Isn't that interesting?
And it shows you why you should ask that. That's why I asked you the question about the job descriptions and whatever. Because then when you come in, you already know what the game. I think you know what the game plan is and what your game
plan is.
Hey, it's fair on both sides.
You bring up a good point. May I digress back to the Facebook conversation?
Sure.
There's something very, very important that I hope doesn't escape the discussion about Facebook, because our conversation's been focused on that very recent case and the labor board's decision around that. But this is very important. Just like we were talking about divorces and so forth, all that stuff that people put on their social media pages is also being used now by employers when they're making hiring decisions. So even if the information that an individual puts out is not used against them by their current employer, if they have some bad stuff out there saying bad things about their current employer and they're out looking for a new job and they're being interviewed, there's a pretty good chance that in this day and age, the person doing the screening is out looking for information on those candidates on their own social media pages. And if there's bad stuff out there, it could have a very negative impact on a hiring decision for that person.
Sure, they might not even know what happened.
Exactly.
Yeah, you don't understand. You say, well, my resume was so good, I don't understand. Yeah.
I was in the running. I made the short list. What happened? You're not returning my phone calls. Well, what you say can and will be used against you. Maybe not today, but it will come back to haunt you tomorrow.
I agree. Perfect place to end this. Be careful out there, folks. Paul Bazell, HR consultant, thanks so much for joining us on America Tonight.
Thanks for having me, Kate.